It's Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Patty Vasquez coming up at 11. She is in Springfield. Tomorrow's the big budget address. As I said, needs a new name since there's no budget. Governor Rauner will, I believe that it's 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock kind of thing in the daytime. We'll be covering it here on WGN Radio, and you can find all of the information at WGNradio.com. Patty is out there tonight. She's and I believe that unless she's coming back, she'll also be doing it tomorrow night. Well, with the death of Justice Scalia, the political fighting has been pretty much centered around the confirmation process, whether or not the president will be able to get a nomination through the Republican-controlled Senate. But even before that happens, there are a few cases that could be affected by the lack of nine justices. We've heard a little about the California case surrounding union dues. But what about the most recent news about the Clean Power Plant? The Supreme Court had ruled a stay to evaluate litigation from coal companies. There was also worry that the court would rule against President Obama's big clean power plant, sending us back to the drawing board when it comes to plans to curb pollution and take on climate change, which is really all of this came out of the Paris summit back in late 2015. So what does it mean? What does Justice Scalia's death mean for this particular case? Howard Lerner is the executive director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center based here in Chicago and a frequent guest here on the Download. Good to see you, Howard.
Good to join you.
So let's talk about this because, you know, I was surprised, you know, I quickly got on the horn with you when I saw this news last week, but I was surprised to see that the Supreme Court issued a stay. That's not that usual, right?
This was extraordinary. Attorneys can't remember the last time that the Supreme Court has stayed a regulation under these circumstances from taking effect while the case is pending. As a practical matter, the Clean Power Plan doesn't require real reductions in pollution for another half dozen years. States are engaged in a planning process. The planning process will lead to plans that get finalized mm-hmm. in 2 to 3 years. At that point, there are several years before actual actions have to be taken. Most people viewed the request by some of the coal companies and some of the states as being, if you will, a Hail Mary pass. And generally speaking, experienced attorneys were stunned that the court, by a 5-4 decision, issued a very short, less than one-page order staying the Clean Power Act.
What was in that order?
All that order said was it stayed while the case is appealed before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. That's the second highest court in the land. That court has taken the case. It denied a stay. It set up an expedited briefing schedule. The case will have oral argument the beginning of June, and we would expect that sometime in the fall, maybe the early fall, the court will issue its opinion. If it upholds the Clean Power Plan, and we think more likely than not that's what will happen, then the coal companies in some of the states like West Virginia will file a petition for certiorari asking the U.S. Supreme Court to take the case.
And based on the stay, it seems like they're interested and it's almost like hinting that they want it.
Pretty clear from the stay that the Supreme Court will take the case, and indeed it's probably a case the court ought to take. You know, there's certain cases that are just big, important cases for our country. Whether it's Obamacare, whichever side you happen to be on that, the same-sex marriage cases, or here the big climate change case, people sort of expect the Supreme Court will weigh in on that. So I think everybody on both sides think it's pretty likely the Supreme Court will consider the case on the merits, but a lot of people were stunned or very surprised by the really extraordinary stay action. But all that then gets turned upside down.
Right. We'll get
a
to that
days
we're,
later.
We're going to get to
as
this.
Justice Scalia
but,
passes
before,
away.
Before
sadly,
we talk about what the repercussions are or the ramifications of Justice Scalia's death. I'm interested because the people who are paying attention to this, who see that the Clean Power Plan comes out, and they say, you know, just laymen who are like, great, it looks like the USA is going to take climate change seriously. We're going to, you know, sort of look at reducing pollutions, carbon footprint, all the kind of stuff we've been talking about and talking about. It seemed like everybody on the surface was like in agreement that this was a good thing. Why? I mean, you said it is good for the case for the court to look at this, but why? I mean, it's not like it's that contentious or that controversial.
Well, it's pretty controversial, but you look at how the parties line up, and it's different than usual. So here in Illinois, a lot of people see the Clean Power Plan as both a way in which we're going to reduce pollution that improves public health. We step up and lead to do that. It's good for the environment, and it's an opportunity to help grow the clean energy sector. And that's good for jobs.
Sure.
That's good for economic growth. That's good for the environment. Illinois is the fifth largest state in the country in terms of wind power capacity. We have 13 major wind power companies with corporate headquarters in Chicago and about 20,000 jobs in the state through the solar and wind industry. So getting the Clean Power Plan to drive clean energy jobs in Illinois, that's good for jobs, it's good for economic growth, it's good for the environment. It's a winner for this state. And not only are the environmental and public health groups supportive, so is the city of Chicago, so is Exelon. Exelon owns a lot of nuclear power plants.
Sure.
Exelon's nuclear plants compete with coal plants.
So it's the coal industry that obviously.
That's right.
They just understand that they're going to be forced into having to roll back, and also and that means at the end of the day lose money. But that's part of what we're figuring out as a society, isn't it? I mean, like, we can't keep producing at this rate with carbon and coal. It has to be reduced. The government comes in and says, we all agree it needs to be reduced based on a summit in Paris. Mm-hmm. And here we are with the Supreme Court saying, not so fast. What are they going to say? No, and then we're going to go back and we're just going to spend years doing this back and forth?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, working to solve climate change problems is not a want-to-do. It's a got-to-do.
Right.
We are seeing the impacts in terms of extreme weather events, flooding, hurricanes, impact on people and on our weather that's predictable, and that's what the scientists are telling us is going to happen. So this is not a matter of we can say, you know, golly gee whiz, it'd be nice to do something about this. We got to do something. We need to lead here in Chicago, in the United States, and we need to step up and act globally. Whether carbon pollution comes from Indiana or Indonesia, same impact of heat-treating gases on the atmosphere. So this is one we've got to do. The trick is, how do we do it in a way that's both economically efficient and it helps grow our economy? And doing that by growing energy efficiency that saves business and people money on our utility bills, growing the clean energy sector, wind power jobs, solar. I mean, these are ways in which we can grow the economy mm-hmm. that helps us here solve a problem. And the technologies that we develop, we deploy here, can be transferred to developing countries to help save the world in those countries and solve problems. So that's the opportunity.
Yeah, right. That's the opportunity. And that sounds common sense. So,
now,
you know, if, let's have judges.
If you own a lot of coal plants.
Right.
What the Clean Power Plan does, it makes you internalize the economic costs of your pollution. You can't force the costs off on the public. It, in effect, prices your carbon pollution. So the coal companies and some states that have a lot of coal industry in there are suing the government, and they're saying this plan is no good. They're entitled to have their day in court.
Okay.
That's what they have before the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals is going to hear their case, and we hope they'll uphold the EPA. What the Supreme Court did, which was extraordinary, with all due respect, wrong, was by a 5-4 decision, put a stay on the Clean Power Plan while the appeal was pending. And that's a political decision. The court's never done that sort of decision before. Mm-hmm. With all due respect, it wasn't the right thing for the court to do.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. And then we have to talk about replacing Justice Scalia and what his what the vacancy means for this. I mean, this is, it was 5-4. You keep saying 5-4. Scalia was in the majority. So let's see how it kind of plays.
Balance, yeah, Justin.
Howard Lerner is the executive director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center based here in Chicago. When we come back, more with Howard here in The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest, Howard Lerner, is the Executive Director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center based here in Chicago. I'm talking about the Clean Power Plan, the stay that was put up by the Supreme Court last week. I mean, I feel like it was not even 7 days ago. And how that changes with the passing of Justice Scalia, who was in the majority of the stay and was obviously a vote against the Clean Power Plan if it was going to get to the Supreme Court. Howard, you wrote about this this week for your blog at the ELPC. Tell me about what could happen now that Justice Scalia is no longer on the court.
Well, a court has 9 votes. You count the votes. In the 2 preceding cases, Massachusetts versus EPA and AEP versus Connecticut, there were at least 5 justices who upheld the U.S. EPA's ability to regulate greenhouse gases under the Clean Air Act. That's pretty settled law. That's why the 5-4 vote on the stay really surprised people, particularly because Justice Kennedy swung over to be the 5th vote. But now one of those votes, sadly, is gone. So it's now 4-4, if you will. And on the merits, if Kennedy were to be with the justices he joined on Mass versus EPA, it's 5.
Right, 5-3.
All right, so 4-4, maybe 5-3 in favor of the Clean Power Plan. And the president now is moving to appoint a replacement for Justice Scalia. Now, as we all read in the newspapers and hear publicly, first Senator McConnell said, even though the president constitutionally has the right to appoint a justice, we're not going to let him go forward with an appointment. We won't consider one because he only has 340 days left in his term of office. With all due respect, the Supreme Court appointment is not in the Constitution, and the president appoints up until 340 days in advance.
Yeah, right.
The president is elected. He has the right to appoint somebody. The typical appointment process runs about 70 days in the Senate, so there's plenty of time. What we expect will happen is the president will nominate somebody, as he said, in due time. And there'll be tremendous pressure on the Senate and on the Republicans in the Senate to not be labeled obstructionist and to take up somebody on the merits. And the question then is, does the person have the intellectual capacity to be on the court? Is the person perceived as tough but fair? And is the person, to some degree, within the relative mainstream of American legal thought?
Let me ask you this, Howard. I feel like we've seen such a shift in the Supreme Court. Just the values and the ideals of a Supreme Court justice over the years, where an issue like climate change is one that any justice that would be, any judge, anyone who would be up for the nomination of justice would look at this issue differently than a judge that maybe came up in the 70s or came up in the 80s. If a new judge comes in, regardless of their politics, don't they have a little bit more understanding of what our environmental issues are at this point? And would, beyond the fact of being conservative or liberal, would say, hey, this is something we got to get done?
Look, indeed, it's a pretty conservative principle to say scientists tell us that climate change is happening. It has a tremendous impact on extreme weather events, changing water levels, the way people live, and we're going to do the conservative, prudent thing about taking steps to try to avoid that problem. It's basically risk insurance, and I've never thought of home insurance or auto insurance as being conservative.
Right.
Or liberal.
Right.
It's what prudent people and thoughtful people do to protect against things that happen. It's the reason you go to a doctor and say, check me up and make sure that there's nothing wrong with me.
Right.
You hope there isn't, but you do that because that's a good, prudent, conservative thing to do. Judges read the newspaper, and I think that to some degree the justices on the court are certainly aware of how science has developed and changed, and what started off with 80% certainty went to 90, went to 95, and now 99% of the scientists agree what causes climate change. It's, heated gases coming from power plants and from the transportation sector that get into the atmosphere and warm it up, increase the temperature, and that helps melt the polar ice cap and have other effects on water and the environment. So look at what happened on same-sex marriage. 30 years ago, the Supreme Court, in a case in Georgia, Bowers versus Hardwick, denied that there was a right, or to be more precise, they refused to overturn a law in Georgia that made criminal behavior between same-sex couples. Then in a case called Lawrence versus Texas, mm-hmm. the Supreme Court went the other way. And it's not necessarily because the court became more liberal or the court became so much different. The membership.
Times changed.
Times
right.
changed.
Right.
And, you know, justices are people. They look at their friends, their family, society, and others. And in Lawrence versus Texas, the court said, you know what? Maybe we didn't quite understand it all right in the Georgia case 20-some years ago. And then recently, by a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court, as we all know, in June, in effect, said that state laws legalizing same-sex marriage are permissible.
Let me ask you this, Howard, from talking about climate change.
Constitutionally, if you will, required.
Yeah. I guess the issue for me is, are there any precedents that are out there right now when it comes to regulating emissions, coal or you know, that could get in the way of moving forward on any government, any president, any administration trying to execute climate change or pollution reduction?
Sure they are, but within limits. Okay. The U.S. Supreme Court, without making this sound like my law school class.
I teach over at Northwestern.
Yeah. We go through this.
Yeah, I never gone to law school.
In 2007, in the Massachusetts versus EPA case, what the Supreme Court said was that Congress in the Clean Air Act required EPA to regulate pollutants, which include carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
And therefore, if the EPA found that carbon dioxide endangered the public health, based on science, which the EPA did, it had to regulate greenhouse gases to reduce that pollution. And then in a case called American Electric Power versus Connecticut in 2009, the court once again, this time with Chief Justice Roberts joining the majority, 6 votes, in effect reaffirmed Massachusetts versus EPA. So solid authority, twice the court has ruled, that EPA can and must regulate carbon dioxide pollution, greenhouse gases that come from coal plants that affect the atmosphere that cause climate change and global warming.
I see.
Okay. The question then is not did EPA have authority. Most of the justices have so concluded, and even those who disagree are bound by what's called stare decisis, namely the courts decided the issue. The question is whether the EPA acted in a way that is arbitrary and capricious and exceeded its legal authority. All right. That's a fair argument for opponents to make, if they make it in those terms. And they also have a pretty heavy burden. To say that an agency is arbitrary and capricious means you have to overcome your burden where the agency is entitled to what's called deference to implement its statutory authority. So is it possible they could win? They could argue, and there is some case law on this, that the agency just went well outside the bounds of its discretion to try to do the very best job it could do regulating greenhouse gases. But the agency has a lot of discretion, and that's whether it's the EPA or the Federal Communications Commission or the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, or any of the alphabet soup agencies. The fact is they're given discretion and some degree of deference, because otherwise everybody would go into court and just nitpick them
to death
and sort of say, well, if I was head of the agency, here's what I would have done.
But that's
not the standard. The standard is, did they act arbitrarily and capriciously, which most lawyers would sort of say, did they really screw up?
Right. Which in this case, no, because
we
don't know yet. But I say this a lot about a lot of things we talk about on this show, but fascinating.
You're welcome.
Fascinating. Let's see what happens. And we should come back. And I mean, you're on regularly, so we'll talk about some other things. But I definitely want to talk in June when the arguments are in front of the appeals court in D.C. about this, because this is the future of our planet. And the U.S. has to take a lead on it. And we're going to decide through the courts here coming up this summer into the fall. Howard Lerner is the executive director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center based here in Chicago. Howard, thanks for being here.
Good to join you, and I'll talk to you soon.